We're going to be using this verse as our prayer verse. So we'll chant this as our prayer verse every time. Today I want to teach it to you and unfold it. And then, you know all of this, don't you? Charity, you could teach it in the morning.
Okay.
Because everybody knows, like if we're doing the first couple of verses, then keep learning those, then go on.
Okay.
So you learn how to chant it. And yeah. It's a beautiful chant. We used to always chant it every day at the ashram. Once we taught the Brahma Sutras, we chanted the Dakshinamurti Stotram every day, so everybody gets it by heart. Because the whole vision is in these verses. They're really beautiful. Not that you need to get it by heart, but you can if you want to. Most of we often do get it by heart, this one. So I'm going to chant it the way that we have it here. There's another interpretation, so I'll give us both interpretations, okay? So just repeat after me.
Mauna vyakya prakatita parabrahma tattvam yuvanam. Mauna vyakya prakatita parabrahma tattvam yuvanam. Varshishtante vasadvrishiganaihi avritam brahmanishtaihi. Varshishtante vasadvrishiganaihi avritam brahmanishtai acharyendram 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 karakalita chinmudram anandamurtim swatmaramam Mudita vadanam, Dakshinamurtimidehi.
So the last line, that Dakshinamurtim ide. Ide means I praise, you know, or I praise, or also I worship. But it has the sense of praising or extolling. So, Dakshinamurtim ide. Dakshinamurtim is in the accusative. So, I am praising or worshiping the Lord in the form of Dakshinamurti. Dakshinamurti means is the embodiment of Shiva as the first teacher. He's the one facing south, facing death. Everybody else is facing him to gain freedom from death. So, Dakshina means south. So, the one whose murti, whose form is facing south, is a simple meaning. And then all of you are looking toward, as the students, you are looking toward Dakshinamurti, who is free from death. So that's one way to take it. So Dakshinamurtim ide. But think of Dakshinamurti as the first embodiment, the first teacher, the embodiment of Lord Shiva, in the form of the first teacher for whom this Sampradaya, the whole teaching tradition of the Upanishads began with Dakshinamurti, when the creation comes into manifestation. So I praise Dakshinamurti, and I'll just do this first bottom, the bottom line. Mudita Vadanam, Vadanam means the face and the mouth. Mudita has that you know, that gentle smile, whose face has that pleased look on it, the gentle, pleased look. Why? Because, so, Swatma Ramam. Because of reveling in his own self, swa-atma, one's own being, rama means reveling in. You know? So his mind, the mind being with myself, that gentle smile, that pleased look, occurs on my face, right? So salutations to Dakshinamurti, who's sitting there with that half smile, that pleased, gentle look on his face, reveling in his own being. Atma, the self, swa-atma, one's own self. Rama means to revel, to be absorbed in. When we did the meditation today, Swamiji has often done this meditation with just to get in the sthanam, the correct, to let your body actually take on the form of yourself as a symbol. Like, for instance, say if you're very upset, your mind will take, your body and your face will take on a certain form, or if you're angry, it'll take on a form, right? But if you're happy, it'll take on another kind of form. If you're just with yourself, it takes, the body naturally expresses that in its own way. And so what we can do when we're contemplating is let our body take on the form that evokes the self. Just like your moods and emotions evoke the form of the body or the form of the face, right? You can put your face in that form to put you in touch with your own nature. It's a beautiful thing. Even in psychology with our clients sometimes, we just tell them, just smile. Smile, you know. Because the body taking on that form will evoke the emotions that are associated with it. And so oftentimes when Pooja Swamiji is doing a guided meditation, that gently uses this to several times, gently close your eyes, you know, and then like open them and then softly close them. So in the eyelid, there's no wrinkle at all. And the lids are just very gently resting. And by doing that, it makes a difference in terms of your own absorption or your own state of mind. It actually affects it. And then, if you see all of the murtis in the temples, and they're sitting in meditation, it's called a half smile. They have that half smile. So you let yourself have the gentle eyes and that half smile, and that image evokes your nature. So that's why we do that. So when you let your body really relax and you let your face relax with the eyelids so gently closed and that half smile, the body is actually, is a symbol. It's a symbol of your own being and it evokes it. So that's why we do that. And so here when we're He's praising the form of Dakshinamurti. When we see Bhagawan, or even here, if you see it, you know, you'll see the Murti in the temple sitting like that, with that half smile and the eyes gently closed. Swami used to tell kind of a joke with a little boy is at the temple with his mother, and it's Lord Shiva temple, and the little boy asks his mom, who's the Lord meditating on? You know, he's sitting there. Who's he meditating on? Because it's Bhagawan. Who's Bhagawan meditating on? You know, he's being with himself. That Swatmaraman, just simply being with himself. But that's what we're doing also. Just simply being with ourself. Because the very self that I am is the self that Bhagawan is meditating on is the self that I'm meditating on. There's not two selves, there's only one. And so as Bhagawan is just being with himself, I'm just being with myself, the same self. You know. So these murtis are very significant in that way. You know, and then, and we go to the temple and we're doing a puja and we're worshiping Bhagawan meditating on himself. Even though we don't know quite what that means, we're still evoking. We're evoking Bhagawan in that form and the one who's enjoying fully his own being, which is what, as we mature and gain knowledge, that's exactly what we're doing. We're enjoying and contemplating on our own being. And just, we'll see as we progress in the meditation, we're contemplating on our own being, and then there's this little shift. Contemplating on our own being, and then we're just being me. The mind, the buddhi is differentiating me and gently focusing on me, and then I make a little shift and let the buddhi focus on me, and then I just be me, right? Because the buddhi doesn't need to focus on, the mind doesn't need to focus on me for me to be. It's just like I don't have to hold up a mirror to my face for me to be, right? I don't need the mirror. But then if I want to see what I look like, I can hold up the mirror. But I don't need the mirror. Right? The mirror is not giving me my self-experience. And my buddhi, my mind, is not giving me my self-experience. I am my own experience. I am the self-experience. I am the conscious being. It's not that the buddhi has to become focus on me so that I can have an experience of me. I am the experience. I am the self-experience. And so when we were doing the meditation today, it just started, so if you didn't get it, it's fine. Keep doing it. There's two things happening every moment. There's me, my own presence, my own being, and there's mitya. We'll see what that means. There's all of the experiences that are coming and going, that are illumined by me, that are shine after me. It's called anubhati. All the experiences shine after me, but I am my own light. Right? So in any moment, you are present as me, as your own self, and then all of the experiences are shining after you. So those experiences or any type of mind or the mind focusing on you is not at all giving you your self-experience. It's just letting the mind itself allow you to become dominant in it. See what I mean? Like my mind, like right now I'm looking at you, and I'm focusing on you. Or I'm taking a walk, I'm focusing on nature, or I'm focusing on my relationship. So those thought modifications are filling the mind. They're not covering me, they're just filling the mind. Right? I'm the one who is shining, and those experiences that my mind is having are shining after me. But the mind, the buddhi, its focus is on whatever I'm doing out here, right? So that activity of the mind or those impressions in the mind are being illumined by me. Okay? So even in that case, I am there, self-shining, and whatever I'm focusing on is there, illumined. You understand what I mean? Do you, I hope? So now say your mind, instead of focusing on whatever I'm engaged in, is itself turning toward my own being. Instead of being engaged out here, it's turning toward my own being. It need not. It need not, because yourself is self-evident and present no matter what your mind is focusing on. But your mind has the option of focusing in this direction or this direction or this direction, or it can focus like a mirror turned inwards, just focus on me. See? But I don't require that. It's good for the mind to do so that it can recognize myself and root itself in me. But I'm not known. I'm not, my self experience is not given to me by the mind focusing on me. I'm self-evident as conscious being. I'm my own experience, right? And so my own experience is always abiding as me. And then the mind can, I often say, just gently notice me, focus on me, or it can be engaged in other things. In any case, I'm abiding as me, just being myself, and the mind is doing what it's doing, focused on me or not. But when we contemplate, we're letting the buddhi focus on me, right? So that I feel more, I dominate the buddhi. You see? I'm dominating it because it's focused on me. Otherwise, I simply am, and the thoughts are illumined and enjoying me, but the focus of the buddhi is not on me. Not that it need be. So, if I'm contemplating, I gently focus the buddhi focus on me, and then we'll see as we do go on further in the meditations, I make a gentle shift just for the sake of my mind, and instead of worrying about the buddhi focusing on me, I just be me. Because that's the, when you think I am or you have your own self-experience, that isn't given to you by your mind or your body. Your self-experience, the me experience, is your nature. It is the nature of me. So you make that shift just to be me and then recognize in all experience you are there and all of the mitya, all of the experiences that come and go are there. It's just a subtle little thing, but it's very, very nice. And so when Dakshinamurti is meditating, he is, his mind is with him, reveling in his own self, and he is being himself. See? So, swatmadamam means reveling the reveling in his own self, his mind assumes this mudita, pleased. His face takes on this pleased smile, because that pleased smile is a natural expression of his self. Okay. So now that's the first bottom line. Now let's go back up to the beginning. So all of these are in the accusative singular, right? All of these compounds, because I praise or I'm evoking or worshiping Dakshinamurti, who is Swatmaramam, Mudita Vadanam. And then let's go to the top. Mauna Vyakya Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam. This is a Bahuvrihi compound. I'm saying little things for Sanskrit students. This is a Bahuvrihi compound, which is like a name for Dakshinamurti. So it'd be Mauna means silence. Without words, silence. Vyakya, the one who is teaching through silence. Mauna Vyakya, one who is teaching, expounding upon through silence. Prakatita Parabrahma Tattvam. So let's go from the bottom back. The truth, Tattva is the truth of Parabrahman. Whether you can say the truth of para Brahman, Brahman, which is para. Brahman means yourself, which is in fact infinite and the self of the whole creation. So in Vedanta, the Mahavakya, the whole teaching of the Vedanta, is that you, this Atma, the self that you are, is in fact the non-dual self of all beings, of Ishwara, of the entire creation. So Parabrahma, Brahma means the self, the Atma, this conscious being, that is you in fact, which is infinite. Brahma means infinite, that which is big. Big means, Puja Swamiji used this example for Brahma, it comes from the root Bra, means to increase. Brahma means that which is big. So we can say, that's a really big mosquito, or that's a big elephant, or that's a big mountain, or that's a big person. Here the size of big, right, becomes adjectival to the object. So a big mosquito is not as big as a big mountain, right? Because it's just labeling the object. But that which is just simply big in reference to anything, right, it is big. So it means infinite. There is nothing bigger than it. So Brahman means your Atma. The Atma is Brahman, is infinite. So Brahman is the self, which is infinite. Infinite means there's only one of you. Because if yourself is infinite, there's not room for anything else. There's not anything like infinite plus one. So infinite means the self that you are is the self in all beings, the very self of the creation. There's not room for something else, because that something else is already subsumed into Brahman. So your being, the being that you are, is infinite. So we call that Brahman. And when we say para Brahman, sometimes the word para means that which is supreme. But what does supreme mean? So they say in Sanskrit, desha, kala, vastu, apariceda. Apariceda means not limited or circumscribed. The Brahman, the self, is not circumscribed or limited by desha, by space, by kala, by time, by vastu, any type of objectivity. Because if Brahman were an object within time and space, then it's limited by all the other objects, right? So that which is not limited by anything that can be objectified, right? So desha kala vastu aparicheda means absolutely limitless from every standpoint. So here, parabrahma tattvam, by whom, as a bahuvrihi, the truth, which is Brahman, the truth of Parabrahman, Brahman, which is infinite, Prakatita. Prakatita means to unfold. Any subject matter in Vedanta, we say the Vedanta is unfolded. You know, it's taught in such a way, it's unfolded to the student. So the student, and that unfolding means step by step by step, the truth of Parabrahman is unfolded, removing layers and layers of ajnanam, layers and layers of ignorance, so that you can recognize yourself. So that the unfoldment is actually the wielding of Vedanta as a pramana, as a means of knowledge, so that you can recognize yourself as Parabrahman. So here, this unfoldment takes place through the vyakhya, the teaching, which takes place maunam, in silence. So we'll see. Dakshinamurti is sitting there. Dakshinamurti is sitting there in silence with a particular chin mudra.
They're
going to
cook food.
Oh, no.
Oh, they don't mean to... Ingen, det kan vi gjøre etter klassen.
Men jeg tror ikke vi rekker.
Det får vi til på en annen måte.
Ok, ja. Da skal jeg gå og si fra.
Så vent til å svarte en tråde.
Ok, ja. Do you have to turn something on or something?
They said they were going to go cooking.
Okay. We shouldn't have it like that, though. Yeah, that's not going to work.
They're coming back. They didn't know, so she's coming back.
Okay. Okay. So mauna vyakhya, teaching which takes place in silence. We'll see how that happens. Then, so mauna vyakhya prakatita parabrahma tattvam yuvanam. Then another adjective for Dakshinamurti. The one yuvanam means he is young. Dakshinamurti is young. But it's through him that this truth is being unfolded. To who? He says, varshishta ante vasat rishiganaihi avratam brahmanishtaihi. This is where it's going to be different. He's young, sitting there giving this teaching, surrounded by a group of rishis, sages, who are living with him. Ante vasat, they're his students, they're living with him. You know, if you live in a gurukula, you're ante vases, you're dwelling in his home with him. So when we go to, say, the three-year course, for instance, we're ante vases. We're living inside with our teacher, living in the place. So these sages are all living there. These sages are all living there with Dakshinamurti as his students. And who are they? They're rishis. They're a group of rishis who are varashishta, very old. They're very ancient, very old, sitting there with him. And they themselves are all brahmanishtas. They're all totally committed to this knowledge and abiding in this knowledge, this brahmanishtaihi. Okay. So Dakshinamurti is sitting there surrounded by this group of ancient sages who are all living with him, okay, as his students. They themselves being brahmanishtas. Okay. That's one interpretation. There's another way of taking this. Instead of brahmanishtaihi, brahmanishtam. That means that Dakshinamurti himself, abiding in brahmanishta, is surrounded by these very ancient rishis all sitting around him, studying with him. Yeah. In that case, if you take it that way, there in the Vedas there are rishis who are very learned in many, many different subjects, but they need not have self-knowledge. And so here are these old, old revered sages who now are mumukshus, you know, wanting to learn the nature of themselves, even though they're so well-versed and are passing down so many of the disciplines, you know, within the Vedas. Now they need self-knowledge, and so they're sitting there as great learned men and women, usually men, you know, with their mind, with that mumukshutvam, that desire for liberation, and they have committed to dharma, so they have that antakarana shuddhi, that purity of mind, that's just sitting there completely available for this knowledge. So it's, you either take it as they themselves are surrounding Dakshinamurti themselves enjoying their minds absorbed in Brahman. Okay, so I'll tell the difference of that in a little bit with these once we finish these two lines. Then it says, Acharyendam, Dakshinamurti himself, is the Lord, the Indra is, of all of the devas, Lord Indra is one, a devata, he is the most exalted of the devas. And so now, so Indra will often be used as for anyone who is the most exalted in their field. So Acharyendam, Dakshinamurti is the one who is the most exalted among all teachers. Because he's the first teacher. He's the Lord himself incarnate to teach. So Acharyendram. Then Kara Kalita Chin Mudram. He's teaching by having a mudra. Mudra is, there are many different mudras that your hands and your body, in fact, can take. But this is the mudra. It's called the Chin Mudra. Chid means consciousness, so Chid plus mudra. It's a mudra of this teaching. And so he's sitting there. So it says Kara. Kara means hand. Kalita is a formation. So the mudra, his hand has taken the form of this mudra, this particular mudra. So Kara, Kalita, Chin Mudram, sitting there with this mudra. Ananda, Ananda Murtim, his whole being, an embodiment of Ananda. Ananda means just the wholeness, the love or the fullness of your own being. Sitting, so he's sitting there, that gentle smile on his face with this mudra, teaching in silence to these sages, elderly sages, who are surrounding him. Right? The sages being very old, him being very young. The Atma, in fact, is timeless. The Atma yourself is called Purana. Purana means it's very ancient, you know, and yet it's always young. It's ever fresh. Nava means ever new. So Purana, which is ancient, means has always been here. It couldn't be more old because it's always been here. But it has never grown old. It has never changed. So one way to think about that, you probably, I remember my mother and some philosophers, in fact, have said, my mother, when she was old, she was in her early 80s, or late 70s, I think. And she said, I'm old, but I'm still the same person that I was when I was young. You don't feel yourself growing old. You find yourself in a body that has grown old, but yourself doesn't grow old at all. So, if you look at the creation as something which is cyclical and has been manifesting and coming into unmanifest, manifesting, unmanifest, from beginningless time, you'd think that Dakshinamurti, as the Lord, must be really old now. But the self doesn't grow old. But the self was there, you know, infinite time ago, and is here now, changelessly, so non-aging. Yeah. And here are all these, surrounded by these rishis, who have grown very, very old. But if it's Brahmanishtaihi, by these rishis, surrounded by these rishis who themselves are Brahmanishta, even though they're old, they're almost also not old, because yourself doesn't grow old. Right? So either he is abiding teaching with this Chin Mudra to them, you know, who are his students, who have now become mumukshus and are ready to learn. Doesn't matter. You can come to this knowledge when you're very young or very old. It just depends on when you become a mumukshu, somebody who wants this knowledge. It's not about gender, it's not about time, it's not about age. It's about being ready. So you might when you're 80s, all of a sudden realize, I wonder who I really am. I really need to know who I am. You know, we have some elders who are students, and often they'll say, why didn't I come to this knowledge earlier? Yeah. It's not really. I understand the kind of the worry. Here I am, 80. I have one student. She's like 82. She's in great shape. She's great mind. But she'll think, you know, she'll often say, "Why didn't I come to this when I was in my 20s?" Yeah. But if you came to this when you're in your 20s or earlier, it's because in the last life, you know, you did all this preparatory work and maybe you were even exposed to Vedanta, but it didn't complete itself. And so now you pick up the thread when you're young. It's because it didn't complete itself in your last life, perhaps. Now you get to pick your samskaras, everything, samskaras on all of your desire, everything for this knowledge is there. You come into this birth. The Bhagavad Gita, it says, Krishna, Arjuna was really worried, you know, that he would be killed on the battlefield. Now Krishna is teaching him all of this Vedanta, but he asked Krishna, what if I'm killed because I need more. I have to assimilate all of this. What will happen to me if I'm killed on the battlefield? You know, and I haven't really completed or gaining the jnana nishtha, that hasn't happened. So Krishna says, don't worry. Either you'll be born into a family of jnanis and you'll pick it up, you know, from a very young age, or if you have certain tendencies or some scars, things that need to be, you need to experience before, you'll experience those things and then you'll be reunited with your teacher and never go backwards. Don't worry. So here, somebody comes to this knowledge when they're 80, they think, oh no, what's going to happen to me? I've just come here. How can I really enjoy my knowledge or gain nishta? Don't worry. You'll just take another birth and you'll pick up where you left off. You don't need not worry. And if you see somebody who's come to it at a young age, that's what happened. That's what happened to them. It's not necessarily any advantage at all. So, so here, mudra, chin mudra. So teaching in silence, being with myself, enjoying myself, and teaching through this mudra. And what this mudra is, the thumb is Brahman, the self which is infinite. This is the ahankara. First finger is the ahankara, the ego. You know? This is the body, mind, sense organs complex. So this body, mind, sense organs, and the ahankara. You start out, when you come to the teacher like this, here's Brahman, here's God over here, over here, and here I am. I am. Where the ahankara is totally identified, the I is totally identified with the body, mind, sense organs. And so this mudra becomes this, where the ahankara now is not, ahankara means I notion. The I notion now is not, no longer with this body, mind, sense organs, it's with me, with myself. So that means that teaching is taking place, that viveka means discrimination. Discrimination requires recognition, right? So that recognition, that differentiation of my own self from the body and the mind and the sense organs, which enjoy me completely. It's not that there's some other self that they have. The very self, the me, that they enjoy is just taken to be one with them. So that means I'm subject to birth and death. I'm subject to disease. I'm subject to all of the vagaries of the mind, all the emotions of the mind, you know, and then I have to try to get out of those things. So all of these things are fine. All the things that are finite and fleeting, I take myself to be. And then I become finite and fleeting. There is no constant experience in the creation. It doesn't exist. The creation is continually, every part of you, in terms of body, mind, sense organs, is fleeting. And then you try to make it non-fleeting. That doesn't work. Even say you have a really happy day, a happy experience, and you want to hang on to it, that is what we call a dukkha yoni. That's just a womb for suffering. Because that's not going to happen. It's vibrant. It's changing all of the time. And yet you don't mind the changes as long as you're not dying or as long as your ananda is not going away, you know. But unfortunately, the vrittis, the thought modifications, the happy thoughts go away, as do the sad thoughts, you know. And the body, of course, becomes old and dies, and there's not much we can do about that. But then I think, well, what about me? That doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem right. And it doesn't seem right because it's not right. You know? But what has to happen from the standpoint of the mind, not from the standpoint of myself, my mind has to recognize that it is dependent upon, totally dependent upon something, the self, conscious being me, which itself is not dependent upon it. Just like the snake is dependent on the rope, if you've mistaken a rope for a snake, the snake is totally dependent on the rope, but the rope's not dependent on it at all. From the standpoint, the rope has no problem. The rope's just a rope. You know, the snake, though, has no being apart from the rope. My mind and body have no being away from me. If I take away the being, the conscious being that I am, then what's left? We'll keep seeing that. But the mind doesn't know that. All the mind knows is that I am me. I, the body, am me. I, the mind, am me. That part is true. It is me, but what it doesn't realize is that this me is totally free of it. That's the very interesting relationship we have to start seeing. You have to discover that the me that I am is never touched or affected in any way by all of these experiences that come and go. The me that I am is free from time, so that's a discovery that has to be made. It's not the gaining of something new. It's the removing of the self-ignorance that has caused my mind to make this mistake of owning myself. Owning myself, which is itself, right? That's why you do a meditation and so you just be, sit with yourself, relax your body, relax your mind, just be yourself, the one who has this body. We're not asking for you to have any new experience, right? Just to be yourself. Relax, be yourself, the one who has this body. That's how we talk, you know, I have this body, I'm thinking about this, I'm doing that. So then just relax and be with yourself, the one who has this body. That self is yourself. There's not another self. That is yourself. But the thing is that your mind takes it to be responsible for that self. And so that means if yourself is, your mind is unhappy, yourself becomes unhappy. Your mind is happy, yourself becomes happy. You know, your body is sick, yourself becomes sick. Your body dies, you will die. That's the problem. It's not the experience of any other self. It's just the discrimination called viveka, to recognize the me that I am that is changeless amidst all of these changing experiences. So, and I am that, so it's not that hard to recognize it. Just have to know what I'm looking for. You know, it's actually easy. Couldn't be easier in some ways. What makes it hard is that I'm so convinced from beginningless time that I am this. Yeah? So convinced. And the world makes that, supports that conviction. For instance, if I have a dream, right, which you'll be seeing in the first verse actually, but if I have a dream, say it's a nice, good, strong dream, right? I've taken a character in that dream and all kinds of activities are going on and I'm engaged with my friends and doing this and that in the dream, right? And say in that dream, as time progresses, I become a mumukshu, somebody who wants self-knowledge, right? Now look at what that dream character has to recognize, because you will be, from the standpoint of that dream character, you are totally ensconced, surrounded with, by duality. You are an individual living within a creation. That's who you are. And you are experiencing the creation that you're living in, the dream creation, through your mind and sense organs. Right? And so I am this, and then you are that. It's all very, very clear. And the whole world supports it. They'll say, yes, you are you, and I'm me, and this is the world that we live in. And we're all different from each other. And we are. This body is different from this body, from this body. This mind and memories is different from your mind and memories. Your perceptions, what you're seeing right now, is different from what everybody else is seeing. That's the reality. And so now I want to know who I am. But I want to know who I am within the context of this duality, right? I don't even know that there's another context. I know the context of this dual world that I find myself in. So now I want to gain self-knowledge. I want to know myself. But now what we're going to recognize is that the self that I am, in fact, is the self of duality. It's the self of the whole creation. This simple self that is me, right, is the simple self that is you, and is the simple self that is you, and the simple self that is you is the simple self that is the self of God. You know, that is changeless. But it is me. It's not somebody else. It's me. But it's the me that I am is not this in the form of this body. This body enjoys me, but I am not in the form of the body. I am not an object, you know, that exists within time and space. So the mind goes, What? How could that be? And what about me? So the mind goes, what about me? Are you taking me away? The mind feels sometimes it freaks out and it feels I'm going to lose. You're trying to kill me, trying to destroy me. No, the me that you are is the me that we're talking about. Yeah, but what about me? What about all my individuality? You know, like all of my knowledge and my personality and all of that. What about that? Well, what about it? You know, as long as you have a body, mind, and sense organs, all these personality and all of these differences are there. But the one who is the self of all of that, you know, yourself is different from all of that. Your personality also always changes. You know, it's just another fleeting thing. Your knowledge has always changed. What about when you start getting old and you lose your memory? And all that goes away. It all comes and goes. It increases and it decreases. Personality goes on changing. But the one who has the personality, you don't change. Yeah. So you can have, what if you say, well, let me keep my personality and let me keep all of my knowledge, but the self that you're talking about, we don't need that. You know? So take the self, take yourself away from your personality, and what do you have? You're gone, so it doesn't make any difference. Okay. It's not the personality that you're attached to. It's not your knowledges and achievements and all that you're really attached to. You're attached to your own being. You know, but you're attached to that own being, which is not seen through a sorrowful mind. As long as you take yourself to be the mind and you're experiencing your being along with the sorrowful mind, and you take yourself to be sorrowful, definitely not attached to that. You're attached to the happy mind, because the happy mind is resonates with your own nature. You know, the unhappy mind doesn't resonate with your nature. From the standpoint of your nature, there's no happy mind or sad mind. I'm not happy or I'm not sad. I'm me. I'm always the same. The wholeness that I am is always there, no matter what type of thought I'm having or what type of emotion I'm having. That's the huge, huge freedom. And what is the nature of that? That's that, you know, Swatmaraman, Dakshinamurti, is just sitting there being with himself, which is gives him that beautiful, gentle smile, reveling in his own being. If you think about it, that's we're meditating, not meditating to resolve into misery. Mm. We're just there, resolve into misery. Who wants that? Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. That's not what happens with us. You just relax, you know, let your mind go, let it be. Give it to Bhagwan, give it to Ishwara. Let your body relax. And what happens? Just resolve into your own nature. What happens when you take a walk in nature, beautiful nature? Resolve. What happens when you go to sleep? People love to go to sleep. Swamiji always joke about it. Love to go to sleep. You have a nice comforter and everything. You snuggle up in your really comfy bed. Why? So you can blot out the whole world. You blot out the whole world, you know. You even blot out your mind. You blot out even any chatter in the mind that says, oh, I'm having such a deep sleep. Oh, this is so wonderful. This is such, no, you get rid of that too. You get rid of the whole duality. And you look forward to it every night. You know? And then when you wake up, say the alarm goes off, you turn it off just so you can go back into that. Blotting out all of duality, just go back it. Ah, so nice. That's you. That's you. You don't require the universe. In fact, we're fine in deep sleep. Let's just get rid of the whole thing so we can just be with myself, basically. What do you do in meditation? Let me just relax. Let everything just, let me just be with myself. You take on this gentle smile. Because that's your nature. That's your nature. So what we want, really, is for my relationship with the universe, with my mind, with my body, with the whole universe, that it not disturb me. Means that it doesn't disturb my mind, so that I don't have to. And if it does, fine, but I just like to be with myself. So my buddhi, my mind, as I discover that really the ananda that I'm seeking is just me, my own being, that the ananda, the fullness, is not out here. What I'm doing out here is trying to relax my mind so that I don't have to have these experiences, these negative experiences, you know, because the source of the ananda is my own being. So let my mind just be with me. And being with me, then let me accept Ishvara. Let me accept the creation as it is. That's why Pooja Swamiji says your heart has to be as big as Ishvara. You know? Means this is my body, it's my form, let it be. If I have something to do, Bhagavan's asking something of me because I find myself in this situation, then let me just do that. Why do I want to get myself all, my mind all upset about it? You know? When the ananda that I'm seeking is all just my own presence. So just being myself, I can, you know, let Ishvara be, let the creation be. That's what we have to wake up to. But until that time, we're superimposing, projecting our ananda onto the world. And I need this, and I need this, and I need this, so that I can just be. All I'm really doing is getting the stress out of the mind for a moment. Let me fulfill this desire, which is stressful as I try to fulfill it. Let me fulfill this desire and the fulfillment of that desire. In the moment, I'm desireless and I can just be. Nothing's bothering me. I'm like a jnani, a brahmanishta for the moment. Just simply be. Just be myself. Because the mind is not competing with me. So what if when I don't need to, I no longer feel like I need to gain my shanti or my wholeness from the world. Then I can be in the world and do what needs to be done and enjoy my relationships, because I don't need you to be a particular way for me to be happy. See now, for all of you now, for me to be happy, I need you to be like this, I need you to be like that. You know, they need the weather to be in a particular way also. It gets very exhausting. And it doesn't work either. So we just want to be ourselves. So we need to know who we are. We need to know what the world is. And to understand Ishvara. Because if there's only one self, then there's only one self. Then the one self that I am is the one self that is the self of the creation. That's what we mean by Ishvara. This creation has a self. That's what makes the creation Bhagavan. You know, So how to be with this, we have to recognize. You know, so let me see. It's probably all we're going to do today.
Yeah.
So we'll just do this prayer verse, and you can practice it in the mornings and this next one too. Okay. Tonight we're going to verse 1. Okay. Let's do our prayer. Om Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.